When the tap runs dry, the clock starts ticking. Stored water is a wonderful thing, but it is a countdown by design. Every gallon you set aside is a gallon you will eventually use, and when the last container is empty, storage alone cannot save you. This is why serious water readiness rests on three connected pillars working together as a chain: acquisition, treatment, and storage. Collection is the pillar that turns a limited reserve into an ongoing supply. It is the discipline that changes the question from how many days you have left to how you will keep water flowing indefinitely. This article is your orientation to the sourcing pillar. It surveys the major ways households can gather water from the world around them once normal supply fails. The goal is not to hand you a single trick to memorize, but to build a mental map so you understand your options and can match them to your environment. A dependable plan never leans on one source. Rain stops falling, streams dry up, wells lose power, and winter freezes everything solid. The households that stay supplied are the ones who understand several methods and know when each one fits. As you read, keep one rule in mind: collection is only acquisition. Getting water into a container is not the same as making it safe to drink or holding it in reserve. Sourcing hands off to purification and to storage every single time. Treat these as one system, not three separate ideas, and you will build genuine water independence. Harvesting rainwater from roofs and structures. For most households, rainwater harvesting is the first source to lean on. There is a simple reason for that: it is often the highest yield method available for the lowest effort. Rain falls freely from the sky, and gravity does nearly all the work for you. You do not have to carry heavy containers back from a stream or dig into the earth. You simply catch what is already coming down before it hits the ground and disappears. Why rain is so appealing? The appeal of rain comes down to volume and ease. A modest roof can produce surprising amounts of water. As a rough figure, 1 inch of rain falling on 1,000 square feet of roof produces roughly 600 gallons of water. Stop and think about that number. A single steady rain over an average home can fill barrels faster than you might expect. That is water you would otherwise watch run off into the yard and vanish. Because gravity does the work, rainwater harvesting suits people who want a reliable supply without exhausting labor. You are not powering a pump or hauling buckets. You are guiding water that is already moving downhill into a place where you can keep it. When IT applies and what IT yields. Rainwater harvesting works in any climate that gets regular precipitation. If your region sees rain through much of the year, this can serve as a backbone of your supply. With enough catchment surface and enough containers, the volumes can be large enough to cover a household's daily needs. Roofs are the obvious catchment surface, but tarps, awnings, and other structures can also funnel water into containers. The effort is low once your system is set up. The catch is that rain is not something you control. It depends entirely on the weather. In the middle of a drought, your catchment surface produces nothing. In a hard freeze, water will not flow, and standing water in your barrels can freeze and crack them. So while rain is a strong first choice, it can never be your only choice. The trade-offs to understand. Beyond the weather dependency, rainwater harvesting requires you to have both a catchment surface and containment ready before the rain arrives. You cannot improvise a full system in the middle of a storm and expect good results. You need gutters or diverters guiding water, and barrels or tanks waiting to receive it. There is also the matter of contamination. Rain itself starts fairly clean, but the moment it touches your roof, it picks up whatever is there: dust, bird droppings, leaves, and residue from the roofing material itself. This first flush of water carries the highest concentration of contaminants, which is why many systems divert the first several gallons away before collecting the rest. In regions affected by acid rain, roofing chemicals and airborne pollutants can further affect quality. None of this makes rainwater unusable, but it does mean one thing clearly: collected rainwater still needs treatment before you drink it, and it needs containers to hold your reserve. Keep rainwater harvesting in its lane. It is acquisition, and it hands off to purification and storage like every other method. For step-by-step setup, catchment sizing, and first flush design, see the dedicated rainwater harvesting method guide. Drawing from natural surface sources. When rain is not falling, many households turn to the most visible water around them: streams, rivers, lakes, and ponds. Surface water is abundant in a great many environments and is often the natural fallback when the sky stays dry. It is also, however, among the most contamination-prone sources you will ever collect from. Understanding both sides of that coin is the key to using it well. Mapping your surface options. Not all surface water is equal. Flowing water such as streams and rivers is generally preferable to stagnant water like ponds and still lakes. Moving water is less likely to breed the heavy loads of bacteria and algae that build up in water that just sits. It also tends to carry away some of what falls into it. Stagnant ponds, by contrast, can become soups of microorganisms, especially in warm weather. When you scout your area, note where the water comes from and what is upstream. A clear mountain stream running down from an unpopulated area is a very different prospect from a slow creek winding past farm fields and roads. What happens upstream ends up in your container. When IT applies and what IT yields. Surface water applies anywhere you have accessible natural water features within reasonable distance of your home. In those regions, the yield can be effectively unlimited. A river does not run out the way a rain barrel does. As long as the source keeps flowing, you can keep collecting. The effort here is moderate and centers on transport. Water is heavy, weighing over 8 pounds per gallon, and carrying it back from a source is real work. Your reliance on surface water depends heavily on how close it is and how the seasons treat it. Some streams shrink or vanish in summer. Some freeze in winter. Proximity and season shape how practical this source really is for you. The trade-offs to understand. Here is where surface water demands your full attention. Of all the sources covered here, surface water most urgently demands treatment. It is exposed to everything, pathogens from animal and human waste, agricultural runoff carrying fertilizers and pesticides, industrial pollution, and heavy sediment. A stream can look crystal clear and still be carrying organisms that will make you seriously ill. This is why the handoff matters more here than anywhere else. Collecting surface water is only acquisition. You never drink it as it comes out of the source. Ever. Filling your container is step one of a longer process that always runs through purification. The clearest water in the world can hide dangers you cannot see, taste, or smell. Use surface water as the powerful fallback it is, but respect it. For techniques on identifying good collection points, accessing sources safely, and reducing sediment at the gathering stage, see the surface water collection method guide. Then follow the handoff directly to the purification pillar, which is not optional for this source. Capping groundwater and wells. Beneath your feet lies the most stable and protected water reserve most households can reach. Groundwater, accessed through wells, springs, and hand-dug or driven points, is prized for a reason. The earth itself acts as a giant filter, and water that has traveled down through layers of soil and rock is far less exposed to the contamination that plagues surface sources. For long-term self-reliance, groundwater is one of the most dependable options there is. Why groundwater is so valued? The strength of groundwater is consistency. A river might flood 1 month and dry up the next, and rain comes and goes with the weather. Groundwater changes slowly. Once you have reliable access, it tends to keep producing season after season. Because it is buried, it is shielded from the daily assault of surface pollutants, animal waste, and runoff. This combination of steadiness and relative purity makes it a favorite of people building genuine water independence. The forms groundwater takes. Groundwater reaches the surface in several ways. The most familiar is an existing well, common on rural properties. The challenge with many wells is that they rely on electric pumps. When the power fails, so does your easy access, unless you have a manual pump or another way to draw water up by hand. This is a gap many people do not notice until the grid goes down. Natural springs are another form, where groundwater emerges on its own at the surface. A reliable spring is a genuine treasure, offering water with no pumping required at all. Finally, there are shallow-driven or hand-dug wells, which reach a high water table with focused labor and relatively simple equipment. On properties where the water table sits close to the surface, these can be within reach of a determined household. When IT applies and what IT yields. Groundwater applies best to properties that already have wells or that sit above a high water table. In those situations, the yield is steady and reliable, the kind of supply you can plan a life around. The effort profile is distinctive, high setup effort, but low ongoing effort. Establishing access, whether restoring a well, developing a spring, or driving a point, takes real work and sometimes real cost. But once that access exists, the daily labor of drawing water is modest. The trade-offs to understand. The main trade-offs are power dependence and the upfront investment. If your well needs electricity, you must solve that problem before an emergency, not during one. Establishing new access costs money and labor, and not every property has groundwater within practical reach. There is one more point that surprises people. Groundwater is not automatically safe. It is relatively protected, but it can still carry natural minerals, bacteria, or contamination that seep down from the surface. Even well water should be tested and treated. The earth is a good filter, not a perfect one. As with every source, acquisition hands off to purification and storage. For guidance on manual pumps, spring development, and driven points, see the wells and groundwater method guide. Melting snow, ice, and capturing moisture. Sometimes conventional sources are frozen solid or simply absent. In a hard winter, streams turn to ice and rain barrels sit empty. In a desert, there may be no visible water at all. Even then, water can still be drawn from snow, ice, and the air itself. These are the cold climate and last resort methods, and while they can keep a supply trickling when nothing else works, it is vital to understand their real limits before you rely on them. Melting snow and ice. In freezing regions, snow and ice are water waiting to be released. Melting them is straightforward in concept, but the yields humble most people. Snow melts down to surprisingly little water, roughly a 10 to 1 ratio, meaning 10 cups of fluffy snow may give you only about 1 cup of water. Ice yields more per volume than loose snow, so packed snow or ice is worth seeking out when you have the choice. The catch is energy. Melting snow and ice is fuel and energy intensive. You need a heat source and time, and in a survival situation both are precious. This makes melting a supplement in cold conditions, not a carefree solution. One warning matters above all others: never eat snow directly. It may seem like an easy shortcut, but eating snow forces your body to spend heat melting it internally, dropping your core temperature and raising your risk of hypothermia at the worst possible time. Always melt it first. And remember that melted snow, despite looking clean, still needs purification. Snow captures airborne pollutants as it falls, and it can pick up contaminants where it lands. Capturing atmospheric moisture. In arid conditions or true emergencies, you can pull small amounts of water from the air and from plants. Several resourceful approaches exist. Dew collection involves wiping morning moisture from surfaces or plants with a cloth and wringing it out. Plant transpiration bags are clear bags tied over living leafy branches, which trap the moisture the plant releases through the day. Condensation methods and solar or ground stills use the sun's heat to evaporate moisture from soil or plant matter and then collect the droplets that form on a cover. These methods apply mainly in deserts and desperate situations where nothing else is available. Their honest weakness is yield. Stills and moisture capture produce only small trickles, often a fraction of a cup over many hours, for a great deal of effort and materials. They are very low yield for high effort. Set your expectations accordingly. Treat snow melting and moisture capture as supplements or emergency measures, never as the primary backbone of your plan. They can bridge a dangerous gap, but they will not comfortably supply a household day after day. As with everything in the sourcing pillar, these methods hand off down the chain. Melted snow and even distilled water from a still still deserve attention before drinking, since distillation is not the same as full purification against every risk. For detailed techniques on efficient melting and building effective stills and transpiration bags, see the snow melting and moisture capture method guides. Water collection is the discipline that turns a countdown into a lasting supply. No single source can be trusted alone, because rain stops, streams foul, wells lose power, and cold locks everything in ice. The households that stay supplied are the ones who understand several methods and match them to their own environment and season. Build your mental map now, while things are calm. Know which sources sit within reach of your home, and know their trade-offs before you need them. Above all, remember that collection is only one link in a chain. Every source hands off to purification for safety and to storage for reserve. Treat acquisition, treatment, and storage as one connected system, and you build water independence that truly lasts.